This is The Topic is Trek, episode 37 for Friday, February 1st, 2019. Achieving Pike Performance. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already! And have that bell ready to remind us that, as always, the topic is Trek on this show. Hello. There we go. Hello, everyone. I'm Clinton Allvord, one of your Topic is Trek co-hosts. And beaming in, hopefully safely, to join me, as always, are Mr. Craig Stepp.
I'm giving you my Vulcan hello.
Oh, wait a minute. That means you're going to shoot at me or something? And
oh, I'm sorry. I was giving you the one finger salute. That's the wrong one.
Oh, my. And Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
I'm thinking Red Angel is a good name for a beer.
Yeah. It's kind of like an IPA kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I'm surprised. I would be very surprised if that wasn't in work somewhere. Because they, you know, they have the Klingon ale, or Romulan ale, rather, and the Klingon...
blood wine?
Imperial Stout. Imperial Stout.
Well, they also have the vodka, and they have the was it brandy? The James C. Kirk brandy? So
and scotch.
Yeah, so there's a plethora of things they can have.
Killian's Red Angel Ale.
There you go,
Captain Killian.
All right. Well, as we record
to 10
here,
forward.
Yeah, exactly. or 13 forward. Well, anyway, it is now. Who knows how many days until the release of the Picard series, because we have no idea when that's coming out. But depending on when you hear this, you may still be able to watch the season 2 premiere of Discovery on YouTube. The official one. I'm sure you can find ones that aren't the official one, but CBS All Access has put that out there, I think, for 2 weeks.
They now, of did? Course, oh, yeah. I didn't even know that. I wasn't aware of that. Okay.
You should check the Facebook feed for The Topic is Trek. It's very helpful.
Oh,
I'm just as guilty.
I knew that.
Oh, you guys.
I need to turn on notifications. It doesn't notify you when you're the owner of a group or a page. That's what you can put a post out there and then people will reply. And I have no idea.
I knew about it, Chuck. I was just kidding.
Yeah,
that's
right.
He was just testing. So, of course, if you're listening to this show, if you haven't seen the episodes, we have to warn you that during this episode, there will be spoilers.
Do I have to play it?
Once, at least once.
Where is the darn thing?
Spoiler alert.
There you go.
All right. So keep that in mind. But so I think it was up for 2 weeks after the premiere. It might almost be time for that to come down. But if you just go over and I think it's the CBS All Access account on YouTube, you can hopefully find it over there.
That makes sense. All right.
Absolutely. All right. Well, gentlemen, we have a lot to talk about in this episode. So why don't we get started with our subspace chatter? Wow. It just seemed like it was going to be much more impressive than that. Press all the buttons. Just press all the buttons.
A couple of them out of key from one another.
If you press them just right, nothing happens.
They cancel each other out. All right, well, let's start with a piece of news about the Picard series. This is a segment of an article from Yahoo.com, and Patrick Stewart was talking about the new series, saying that the audience shouldn't expect the old Picard to be... the older Picard to be sporting a gray beard as he does in the TNG series finale, All Good Things. The episode, which celebrates its 25th anniversary in May, memorably bounces between timelines. And we'll talk about All Good Things in another story coming up. But the other thing that he talks about is the fact that he refers to this as a 10-hour movie.
What?
The Picard series. Right. Now, obviously, it's not a 10-hour movie. It's something split up probably into hour-long segments that tells an entire story. So we're not going to have the old TNG format of really episodic adventures of Picard. This one is going to be one long carry-through story. But we also have some other information, I believe, about the Picard series or a potential guest star and showing his geek cred at the same time.
Is that my cue?
That's your cue, Chuck.
From denofgeek.com. Just in case you need more evidence that James McAvoy is one of the most charming actors in Hollywood, the actor recently made his pitch to MTV News about why he should play the young version of Jean-Luc Picard in the upcoming Star Trek series that will see Patrick Stewart reprise the iconic role. I would get so confused. This is just crossing the streams too much now for my poor brain.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, quote, "I will take you where no Star Trek fan has gone before," McAvoy joked. "I will reveal things about Jean-Luc Picard that nobody even wanted to see." Oh, my. "I will rip this captain to shreds." Now, that's sounding more like Tom Hardy.
Yes, exactly. We're coming back to old Star Trek movies.
McAvoy plays the younger version of course, Stewart's Charles Xavier character in X-Men franchise. Wow, my line skipped a line. My brain skipped a line. I said the role. Yeah. X-Men franchise. So he's pretty qualified for the role. In the interview, he also displays a pretty impressive depth of Star Trek The Next Generation knowledge, offering his takes on some of Picard's most quotable catchphrases, including "make it so" and "engage" and "tea Earl Grey hot."
Well, by the way, he can do a much better Picard. So just pointing that out.
Next time, give this to Craig and see what happens.
And there is a video included with this article, and I'd like to mention that if you go over to the show notes for episode 37 over at thetopicistrek.com, you can see this article and all the other ones we're going to be talking about in this episode.
In the video, he's got hair and a beard. It's confusing. Hey. He's not always bald.
He's not doing the role at this point.
He's not doing it yet.
Interview.
Oh, sort of like when I do Professor Farnsworth for the parade.
Exactly.
Sure. I watched the video. I thought he was a little bit on the tongue in cheek side, but I suspect that he would seriously do it because
absolutely.
He mentioned that he was dying to get into Star Trek or something like that. I thought, if I remember right.
And it seems pretty darn perfect, if you ask me.
We forgot something on the last show.
What did we forget?
We forgot to give a shout out to all the people we met on the Star Trek cruise that are now listeners. Thank you very much. You guys are awesome.
Hey, welcome aboard. See, I did there. I used like a nautical phrase.
Uh-huh. Welcome aboard.
How's that? Yeah. Actually, I have the real bosun whistle. Yeah. Wow, I do that really well.
Well, let's move on from welcoming people on board our show to welcoming people on board CBS All Access.
Okay, I'll follow you there.
Good, because I had no idea where I was going.
Yeah, I know, right? So Star Trek Discovery Season 2 boosts subscribers for CBS All Access, which I think this happened
last
the first season, right?
It did indeed.
Yeah, so Deadline reports that CBS All Access brought in new subscribers over the weekend at a record-breaking rate thanks to the return of the series and the AFC Championship game, not related. Though specific numbers were not given, CBS Interactive revealed that the streaming service added more subscribers in a single weekend than ever before and breaking the previous subscription boost by 72%.
So that's pretty darn good.
That's pretty heavy.
I was having a cut. There's that word heavy again.
Is there something wrong with the Earth's gravitational field in the future?
Well, clearly, because it's space and things. But I was having a conversation with someone, and we were discussing how Discovery is doing, and I was pointing out, well, they're not going to go very heavily into all these other series if Discovery isn't doing well. And I think that these numbers kind of bear out that
yes.
Things are supposedly going quite well for the service, and hopefully that bodes well for Star Trek in the future.
They can pour more money into our favorite show.
Absolutely. Which show is that? I've lost track. Is that the one with... Anyway.
Full House 2. Full House.
Deep Space Nine.
Big Brother. Yeah, there you go.
Big Brother. Celebrity Big Brother.
Yeah, the AFC exactly. Championship. What was the name of this show again?
I think it was The Topic is Trek, but don't quote me on that. Well, now we know how CBS All Access is doing. Let's jump over to the Paramount lot and see what's going on. Well, it's been reported, and this comes to us via trekmovie.com.
Excuse me,
well,
sir. Where's your pass to be on the lot?
I left it in the car, and I left my car in the lot. And by lot, I mean I don't have a car. It has been reported that Paramount has shelved plans for Star Trek IV. Even on this show, we reported it. There is an indication that the studio is still looking to bring more Star Trek to the big screen. In addition to talks of a remerger of CBS and Viacom, Paramount's parent company is heating up again. Paramount wants to breathe new life into Trek, and the president of Paramount, who's been with the studio since 2017, yes, all the way back in 2017, Wick Godfrey.
That's when we started this show, right? We're almost 2 years old.
I think we inspired him to be head of Paramount. I don't know. The story from the New York Times says Mr. Godfrey's coming film lineup emphasized big budget global audience movies known in Hollywood as tent poles. The long gestating Top Gun sequel is finally happening. Mr. Godfrey is working to breathe life into the tired Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Terminator, Star Trek, and G.I. Joe franchises. Paramount also has high hopes for films tied to Viacom's cable network, including Dora the Explorer, a live-action big-screen adaptation of the Nickelodeon cartoon.
If she shouts at me, I'm going to go ballistic. That's the one thing that drives me nuts about that show. She's always yelling.
Yeah, all those shows were doing that.
So whether it's whatever its box office viability, though, such fare doesn't quite scream stands the test of time. But Mr. Godfrey insists otherwise. Imagine, for instance, Paramount giving Star Trek to Quentin Tarantino. Suddenly people's eyes light up, Mr. Godfrey said. Yours just did. And of course, this was a story that's not new to us, that Quentin is talking about doing a Star Trek movie, has a writer working on it. Paramount is going through all sorts of its own issues at the moment, one of which is that their deal with Bad Robot is running out fairly soon. Mm-hmm. And Bad Robot is looking to have what they're calling a mega deal, which involves TV, film, theme parks, all these different things. And apparently Paramount is not part of the competition to land Bad Robot for the next decade. Hmm. But we have to keep in mind that Bad Robot doesn't necessarily should be counted out because they have worked on other projects on a one-off basis. So they could still do something involving Star Trek. And as the article also goes on to talk about, those rumors about CBS and Viacom remerging are starting all up again, because now that Les Moonves is gone, essentially there's no opposition to this remerging.
You mentioned, if I'm not mistaken, that there was like a some kind of clause where they were like, hey, we can't do that again, even though he's not there. It's like a time frame thing or.
Well, they were trying to do a deal that would make it financially not worth their while. And this was when Les was still there. So now that that's not happening, it's probably going to be sometime later this year when this comes up for a vote. And what that means to the Paramount division and the CBS division, especially CBS All Access, with what happens to Star Trek is anybody's guess at this point. But we will continue to cover this story because we've been covering it, I think, since we started the show.
Yeah, pretty much.
And it's not necessarily getting any clearer, but hopefully we'll have a resolution to it within the next 12 months.
And the benefit of to all this is what? Maybe a Discovery movie kind of thing?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that whether it's a Discovery movie, whether it's a reinvigoration of some other property in the Star Trek, I mean, I don't think we'd have an Enterprise movie, but I think that you would have more of an emphasis on the combined CBS Paramount to really push a motion picture. Mm-hmm. Whereas now they kind of see it, well, that's one of our tentpole franchises, but you know, CBS would be a lot more interested in, no, I think we need to really do this. Oh, we will see. And speaking of Star Trek Discovery, which we kind of were for a second, and the Picard show, which we're always talking about because I think we all have decided we all want roles on that show. We have a story that comes to us about somebody who's been involved with many of these things.
Quite a bit. Yes, Jonathan Frakes, whom we met on the cruise. It's his view from TrekMovie.com on Roddenberry's vision in Star Trek Discovery, the Picard show. That just sounds like a late night talk show. And yes, his nemesis regret. Mm-hmm. This week's episode of Star Trek Discovery was directed by Star Trek The Next Generation vet Jonathan Frakes, making it his second for the series, with a third time coming up later in the season.
X-Men. It's the X-Men. No.
In a number of new interviews, the TNG vet talks about New Eden being part of Star Trek again and where it is headed, including the Picard series. Warning, article contains minor spoilers. That is actually in here, we can do this then.
Spoiler alert.
They printed it, so I get to play it.
Absolutely.
How Discovery's exploration of faith fits with Roddenberry's vision. New Eden highlighted Discovery's second season theme of science versus faith. That it did, which we will talk about in a little bit. The Hollywood Reporter asked Jonathan Frakes how his storyline would mesh with Gene Roddenberry's secular humanistic vision of the future. Frakes noted that the show was not necessarily embracing faith as much as discussing it. And quote, I'm not sure they're embracing the idea of faith as much as they're embracing the conversation about science versus faith. It's like the Scopes trial, which he did the live reading on the cruise. Funny you should mention that.
Yeah.
The idea we're all naive to believe that there's not higher power out there applies to the 24th century as much as it does to the 21st. We've evolved as a culture a lot since Gene Roddenberry was with us. We have to stay current on...
Wait a minute, have we?
Maybe a teeny.
Yeah.
Hey, I've got more bionic parts than I did when he was around. That's for sure. We have to stay current on many levels in the filmmaking and storytelling. The moral compass of the country seems to have a bit more of a liberal bend than it did back in the day. Gene comes from the 1960s. He was an old hippie. Ha ha.
Yeah, man.
Frakes expanded on this with Deadline, describing how he and showrunner Alex Kurtzman discussed how the theme would fit with Roddenberry's vision. And he goes on to say, when Alex Kurtzman took over the show, essentially, we had a really productive sit down where he explained the arc of the season. Essentially, we talked about Trek in general and my guys and about Roddenberry. He was interested in all of it. And it was a pleasure really talking to him and listening to him. He's got a great curiosity, but he also has a great vision. Gene Roddenberry was an atheist, so he didn't believe in heaven, of course. But, you know, if he was looking down on all of us, I think he would be very, very pleased with the hands that Star Trek is in these days. There's a nice picture of him on the set with Gene. I'm trying to figure out which set that is.
I don't know. There's a young man in the scene as well who appears to be in costume, so... I'm assuming it's from an episode, but I can't be sure.
It says on the set of TNG's Future Imperfect.
There you go. All we had to do was read the caption.
How apropos. Yeah, right. We should really study this material better before the show.
No, we shouldn't. It's, you know, it's part of the charm of the show.
I appreciate the element of a surprise.
Absolutely. I'm surprised every time we do a show.
Get through it.
Now, we've talked an awful lot about the Picard series, and I know what you're thinking is that now Craig is going to talk about another thing that has to do with the Picard series. No, that's not true. He's going to talk about an article that has something to do about Star Trek The Next Generation.
Sort of.
Yeah. And it may have some clues into something else we're looking forward to. So at least one Reddit user believes Avengers Endgame will have a similar structure with Tony Stark and the Avengers fighting Thanos across all three eras of this Marvel Cinematic Universe. It'll have a correlation with All Good Things. So will the Avengers be battling Thanos or whoever they battle simultaneously in different timelines? Could this be Cap America, Natasha, or Ant-Man's confronting Thanos in 2012 New York? Remember, Thanos is behind the New York's alien invasion, while Thor and the Guardians search for Thanos and are snapped. Avengers are in the present. Okay. And Iron Man saves Pepper Potts and their kids in the future. Tony Stark will be confronting all timelines simultaneously alone from Benatar. Not Pat Benatar.
I was wondering.
Yeah, because that's the only thing left. Or
love,
maybe
love is a
because
battlefield.
You broke Craig. Are you happy now, Chuck?
Mission accomplished. Let's beam out of here.
Anyway, so or maybe because of some random anomaly of the timelines, Tony is left behind in space alone, and this is how the film begins. So Marvel Studios head Kevin Feige is a known Star Trek fan. Surprise, surprise. And he has compared the Avengers Endgame to All Good Things. In the past, commenting on how the next gen will gave its crew a satisfying conclusion without needing to kill anyone. So he says, people that always will jump to that, Feige says of the character's story and concluding with death. That's not necessarily what we're talking about here. I talk a lot because I'm a big-ass nerd. Also about Star Trek, The Next Generation, All Good Things. That, to me, is one of the best series finale, and I agree. That wasn't about death. Picard went and played poker with the crew, something he should have done a long time ago, right? So while All Good Things is beloved ending to a beloved series, Picard's story did continue throughout through four Star Trek movies. After the end of the show, Patrick Stewart will return in the role, blah, blah, blah. We already just talked about
it. I'm sorry. The article does go on to mention the Picard series. Every article is now required by law to mention the Picard series, just so you know that. We had talked earlier in an earlier episode about the fact that Feige is a big Star Trek fan, and I think he was the one that made the revelation about how his movies seem to follow that Star Trek rule of, you know, destroying things in the third iteration of something. And so now we've got another connection with Star Trek in this possible connection with All Good Things.
Can I ask you guys a question?
You certainly can. We probably won't have an answer, but go right ahead.
We'll make one up.
What other show can you think of that had a more satisfying ending?
Oh, the Bob Newhart show.
Yeah, that was gonna be the first thing I thought of was Newhart. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
That was the lamest answer. We had to both go there.
Yeah.
It's because it's one of the most obvious answers. I just got done watching Bloodline on Netflix and love the series. The ending, the last three episodes get a little backwards, forwards, confusing. Almost like, if you want to throw All Good Things in there, kind of like that in a slightly different vein. But that was a good one. The ending of Breaking Bad also stands out.
I didn't really care that much for the ending of MASH. So I thought it was very inventive, but I don't know if I necessarily found it satisfying, but maybe that was the point of the ending of MASH. I'm not sure.
Well, I had a long history. It was kind of hard to wrap up.
Saved by the Bell, of course, was another one that I have no idea about Saved by the Bell.
Dora the Explorer.
Yeah.
And please, no spoilers on The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. I don't know how it ends yet, so haven't done all the episodes. All right. Well, on that bizarre note, we'll get back to the topic is Trek.
Oh yeah, that is our topic.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
This week
this is an article. This is an article. I promise you, has nothing to do with the Picard series
or Vulcan, Alberta, Canada.
No, not even Vulcan, Alberta, Canada.
Wow.
Fact, Orville. I'm just kidding.
It's talking about a Pennsylvania native is recording the world's languages in a mission to save them. And this comes to us from tribelive.com. When Daniel Borge, Udell, turned 13, the small world he knew in the Poconos expanded into a much larger one in the kitchen of a local restaurant. It was the first time
I'm going to go with the French because, you know, Brett Favre is F-A-V-R-E, but be Borg.
If the topic is Trek, let's call him Borg.
Okay. Fine. Borg Udell, now 27. I like the way you think, sir. Heard people speaking to one another in Spanish. That job as a busboy in Monroe County sparked a passion that has led him on a mission to record and curate all the world's languages. Now, the article goes on to talk about the fact that he set up it's a service or an office called WikiTongues, and they are going around getting people to record speech in the native language of the person. So far, they've done more than 400 of the world's 7,097 languages.
Got a ways to go.
That's how many there are? Wow.
Yeah, I don't know. You think you'd round that to 7,100. The interesting part about this article comes very late in it. Not all languages have ancient traditions, like Klingon, inspired by the Klingons in, yes, Star Trek. Those languages are called constructed languages, or conlangs, and their popularity waxes and wanes with the times. Now, this is the quote that I found interesting. Klingon is far less learned today, he said. Today, Dothraki from Game of Thrones is more popular. Now, what I find interesting is that is use of Klingon on the rise again as a result of Star Trek Discovery? I don't know. I don't know. He doesn't give numbers about how he finds this sort of thing out. But it's interesting to think because I know several people that can speak Klingon. I guess I wouldn't necessarily notice if someone was speaking a language from Game of Thrones. But I know a number of people, and we've met a number of people. There was one of the people on the cruise who was singing in Klingon.
Wow.
Yes.
So
that was impressive, by the way.
It certainly was. I just find this an interesting statement, and I don't know how to quantify it, and I would be interested to find out what kind of numbers he has behind this. That's just an interesting story, a palate cleanser from the Picard show, if you will.
Hey, by the way, I want to know if Pig Latin is one of the languages.
That's a constructed language now, isn't it? So, I mean, that would be one of those things, and it. Do you know many people that speak Pig Latin these days? I think that's kind of on the wane as well.
No way.
What about JavaScript?
No C++, none of those stuff. No, we're not talking about that type of thing. I think it's a different thing. You want to go to a code site for that type of thing. Let's move on before you guys think too much about this. We'll go on to a story that has an interesting notation about an episode of Star Trek Discovery.
I did notice this. It was very subtle. There was an Easter egg in one of the recent shows. Star Trek Discovery Season 2 premiere dropped a Star Trek Next Generation Easter egg, an early version of the visor made famous by being worn by Geordi LaForge when they were beaming the asteroid and they did a visual close-up. The visor, an acronym for... Go for it, Matt. Gentlemen, do you know what VISOR stands for?
Geordi. Vision. I don't know.
Visual what? Instrument and Sensory Organ Replacement.
It's that was my second guess.
A very important seeing.
Yeah, that's right.
It's an iconic piece of Star Trek Next Generation tech. The visor is a medical device used to aid patients who were born blind or suffered the loss of eyesight. It allows the wearer to, quote, see by detecting electromagnetic signals across the EM spectrum. The wearer receives a very different type of visual acuity when compared to normal eyesight. The visor lets the wearer see infrared and ultraviolet ranges, for example. The visor, I think he was even doing some like X-ray or ultrasonic stuff. He was all over the place when he would show his viewpoint. There's a crack in this bulkhead. Get away. The visor can also detect heart rate and blood temperature, as well as determine if the person is lying by tracking their perspiration. In addition, when Geordi was kidnapped by Lursa and Bator in Star Trek Generations, the Klingon sisters were able to tap into his visor with a video feed and see through it, which allowed them to see the codes of the Enterprise D's defense shields. Ooh. They hacked the visor. Good for them. In Brother, Star Trek Discovery Season 2 premiere, visor is worn by the Discovery's unnamed transporter operator. What poor transporter operators. Never get the love. When acting Captain...
Miles O'Brien? No.
Yeah.
Lieutenant Kyle? No. Reg Dwight? No.
No.
Acting Captain Saru and Commander Michael Burnham arrived in the transporter room to welcome Captain Christopher Pike. However, unlike a single-piece visor Commander LaForge wore in the Enterprise D, the visor worn by the transporter operator included a headpiece that wraps around his head. It also looked more like a stained glass window because it was lots of triangular, not so much vertical stripes on it. It's not clear if the headpiece is a necessary component of the early era visor or a cybernetic attachment needed by that particular Starfleet officer. Other crew members like Discovery Helm and Kayla Detmer also wear cybernetic implants, which I think is absolutely hot. Still, there's no mistaking the unique eyewear as a precursor.
Maybe she needs more of a like cooling fan in there then, if she's overheating.
That one blue contact is just mesmerizing to me. We'll get to more of that in later in the show.
Hey, by the way, you couldn't help but notice that visor because they really focused on it.
Yeah, they lingered on it for quite a while, didn't they?
They did a close-up. There were a few Easter eggs, and I suspect we're going to discover more of them as the season goes on. Again,
discover. Hey, I see what you did there.
Hey, by the way, if I may interject.
No, you may not.
Moving on.
No, speaking of details in the show, I sent this to Clinton because I know Chuck hadn't seen the episode yet. But you know, there's a scene in the New Eden where Tilly goes over there and she's clearing out her stuff on the screen. So I'm sorry, I need to clear this out. And she's hiding her personal windows on that are on the screen that Burnham's using. Well, what's funny was I was curious what was she actually hiding. Sure enough, I pulled up the episode. I did a screenshot of the screen before she was clearing it, and they did show it. And one of the things was like her to-do list, and it had a couple of things like contact Stamets, do this, and then it says get deodorant.
Yeah, I'm thinking, what Tilly, what is going on here?
They didn't solve that problem in the future yet.
Yeah, she has her email open, and there's whatever you would, their correspondences. I think the one that's open is from Burnham, and then she has her checklist of things to do for the training program about checking with Saru and study for test. And it's full of things. And I believe when Burnham comes to the station, she says, oh, it's just running some test of something or others. And she's like rapidly closing all these windows to hide the fact, no, I'm just looking at my mail and, you know, my to-do lists and that sort of thing.
See doctor about drooling in my sleep.
Yeah.
All righty. Well, we're going to take an interesting left-hand turn here for something that doesn't seem like it really would be Star Trek related, but immediately becomes Star Trek related. And Craig, I think you've got this story to do.
Yes. So it looks like Let's Make a Deal is taking a Star Trek turn.
What?
Star Trek will mind meld with Let's Make a Deal for a special all Trekkie episode of the CBS game show. CBS, I see what they did there.
Mm-hmm.
So on February 4th, which with official Star Trek prizes, props, costumes, and a special guest appearance by Mary Chifo from Star Trek Discovery. You can watch the exclusive clip on the article that I'm looking at right here. The partnering represents a potential promotion, promotion for the Star Trek Discovery. They must deliver flagship. That's a weird. Okay. For all CBS All Access subscription play for Let's Make a Deal. The entire Enterprise shows the game show is still boldly going in directions in its 55th year. Wow. After 3,500 episodes with its first takeover branded theme and its first in-show pop culture branded partner. Deadline caught up with Let's Make a Deal executive producer Mike Richards and to ask about the branding partnering and host Wayne Brady's 10th anniversary, Klingon translators, and intuitive gifts of Captain James T. Kirk.
So I thought that was interesting. I didn't realize that this was the first time that Let's Make a Deal has essentially branded itself for another property.
I was trying to remember. I don't know if they're talking about just the new iteration of it or the old one, because I was trying to remember if they ever did that on the old one. Probably not.
I don't think so. Not the Monty Hall days, at least not the ones that I ever saw.
I guess I'm only thinking of all the costumes everybody would wear, but I don't know.
Right. Well, in the clip that you can see over at thetopicistrek.com, you'll be able to see Mary coming out at the beginning, and the audience is full of people in uniforms. Fortunately, the person who is up speaking with Wayne at that point is in a Discovery uniform. I think if I recall correctly, she's being an Andorian. Yeah. And then Mary comes out and comes down, and I didn't finish with the clip. I don't want to spoil the episode before I see it. You know, I didn't want to watch too much of the clip, but you can check the entire thing out, and the show will air relatively soon, February 4th.
Yeah. I'm actually going to go. I subscribe to Hulu, and I'm actually going to go and put that on my watch list so I can see it.
Excellent. Excellent. And speaking of Star Trek Discovery, not the Picard series, this article comes to us from Sci-Fi Wire. Star Trek Discovery tackles General Order 1, World War 3, and the Prime Directive. I won't read this entire article. I would like you to check it out over at thetopicistrek.com. Again, the show notes for episode 37, because it's a well-detailed article that talks about the General Order, which of course is also the Prime Directive.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks about where this World War III comes from. And this is not the same thing as, you know, Khan in the 90s, but it's got a reference in another series. So they're kind of locked into a date for it. It's a very well-researched article that clues you in on how the whole backstory about this takes place. And I highly recommend it. I just wanted to point that one out to people. We're going to move straight on from there to our next story, which is rather comical.
Is it? Okay. So that's, I'm trying, pardon me. I'm actually trying to read the cue cards here.
Yes.
I would say skip the first short paragraph and just read. Oh, I'm not supposed to read that part. I'm not sure where I'm supposed to start, but
Space directions just don't really.
Craig's
work
broken the fourth wall again.
Yeah, that's right.
So, I didn't know there were walls on podcasts, but he found one to break.
Yeah. So Star Trek Year 5 to detail final year of Enterprise's original mission. So according to a piece in a new series, which is a comic series from IDW Publishing, Star Trek Year 5 will be written by various talents on a rotating schedule. It will follow the Enterprise's crew as they carry out their promise to boldly go where none have gone before. It will also cover the crew's time after they return to Earth after the flagship makes its way back home, documenting each officer's adjustment and their thoughts on the future.
Kind of like Gilligan's Island.
Yeah. So the guy heading up the series, Lansing, called the run a vital, hard-hitting, character-focused look at Captain Kirk on his last year in command. The writer also stressed the infamous captain will make decisions that will have a huge ripple effect from the outbreak of war on Alpha in the Alpha Quadrant to an unprecedented strain. I started to say stain. Strain of the trust with Spock will turn a mirror on a modern society. Mirror? Did he say mirror? Just as the original television series did in the 60s, and go boldly towards meaningful, heartfelt stories.
Ah,
so yeah, I'm definitely gonna check this out. IDW has been doing a lot, especially we've reported on a lot of the Mirror Universe stuff.
Yes.
with TNG, and they've got several storylines going on with the Mirror Universe. So.
Very cool. Very cool. And bringing up the rear for our last story.
Bringing up the rear.
No. Get out of there.
Triple rear. Blow, Captain. This is from the Dayton Daily News at DaytonDailyNews.com. Get ready to beam up to a new Star Trek exhibit at the Children's Museum in Indianapolis titled Star Trek Exploring New Worlds. It takes a look at more than 50 years of the intergalactic phenomenon, and it will open the Saturday after this podcast drops, Saturday, February 2nd, but it runs all the way through April 7th. So you've got the month of February and March and a little bit into April to catch that. Quote, Star Trek has entertained, educated, and inspired generations of fans, which makes an exhibit exploring Star Trek's role in advancing science and technology a perfect fit for the Children's Museum of Indianapolis. Dr. Jeffrey H. Patchen, president and CEO of the Children's Museum, said in a news release. The exhibit will explore how science fiction inspired real space travel and how Star Trek has impacted culture, society, art, technology, and fashion. Dayton will be well represented at the Oscars with historic nomination from Wright State grad.
Okay. No, I don't think that's part of the actual article.
I don't think so either. I think that was a clickbait link right in the middle of my favorite article.
I couldn't help clicking on it, though. I must know.
Together. Anyway. Yeah. You find out what happened. You won't believe it.
Yeah. What happened next was astounding.
Together, families will undoubtedly reminisce about the past, enjoying the iconic characters and artifacts they have loved, while discussing the impact Star Trek has had influencing the future by promoting equality and advancing science and popular culture, Patchen said. Best Dayton 2018, Best Jim takes you... We did it again.
Stop. Don't read the links.
If Craig can read the editorial comments...
Click here to figure out how you can last longer.
Download the Dayton Daily News app.
Topic is track. I'm calling Black Alert suddenly. What is going on here?
Alert. Yeah. Alert.
More than 100 artifacts from the television and film series will be on display, including the replica of Captain Kirk's chair, tricorders, phasers, and real dead tribbles. I made that last part up. Data's uniform from the Next Generation and tribbles, which is in there.
Lots and lots of tribbles.
They're everywhere. Stuff them into little wicker baskets. We're fine.
Yeah.
George Takei, the actor who portrayed Hikaru Sulu, the helmsman of the USS Enterprise, has narrated a sound and light show specifically for the museum's Schaefer Planetarium and Space Object Theater. It just basically says, oh my, over and over again. The theater
Here's
will...
the chair. Oh my.
Scandalous.
The theater will become a multimedia experience and include the escape pod used by Captain Kirk in the 2016 film Star Trek Beyond. Very cool.
I didn't realize that was a practical thing. I mean, you know, that they...
Hey, if you can get your hands on any artifacts, you tout it, right?
I guess so.
Lots more articles. Right. Do we have lots of stuff we couldn't talk about?
We do. Matter of fact, if people go over to the show notes for episode 37 over at thetopicistrek.com, we have lots of links to stories we just did not have the time to cover. And in those stories, there are probably links to other stories that you can just kind of go off to, just like Chuck was about to, and find out all sorts of things about other things out there. But I encourage you to do so because you don't know what story might interest you about Trek, and we've got a lot of them over in the show notes. All right, gentlemen, it's about time to close up our subspace chatter.
We ended up in sick bay. How'd that happen?
Yeah.
Don't know what's going on here anymore. And head out on our main mission.
I'm a doctor, not a podcast host.
We're just going to sit here till the doctor shows up.
All right, but you gotta use that. You have to use that thing on the wall with your legs and do that pumping thing back and forth. Anyway.
Maybe the Atavacron can help us today.
Nothing's going to help us today.
We haven't been properly prepared, that's for sure.
Oh, my. You said it. This time around, we're going to be discussing the two first episodes of season two of Star Trek Discovery. We finally have new episodes to talk about. The episodes are Brother and New Eden.
Let's start to New Eden. Yay, no, brother. No.
No, it has nothing to do. No, I didn't see any cauliflower eels or anything anywhere. Let's start with Brother, which was written by Gretchen J. Berg, Aaron Herberts, and Alex Kurtzman.
Herbert.
And you may recognize those names. The first two were involved with the show up until very recently. And Alex Kurtzman, of course, is also the executive producer on Star Trek Discovery. And it was directed by Alex Kurtzman. A very quick synopsis says the crew of the USS Discovery joins forces with Captain Pike to unravel the mystery of seven mysterious red signals that have appeared across the universe.
Now, in the show,
says universe, and it's the galaxy. It's the galaxy, universe.
They said they all appeared simultaneously at one point. How can possibly be when the galaxy is 100,000 light years across? In order to see them simultaneously.
These are only spread out over, I think these are only spread out over 30,000 light years. So that makes it a lot easier.
Sure.
Yeah.
One had to fire up 30,000 years ago and for me to see it simultaneously with the one next door.
That's why it's so mysterious.
Yeah. Right.
Touché.
So I guess I'll start off saying, well, what do you think the red signals are?
Someone's backing up.
No,
a plot device.
It's a plot device. It's the MacGuffin of the story is the red signal. I really have not sure yet. We're going to talk about the red signal again when we talk about New Eden, and that's when I started formulating a theory about what they were. Mm-hmm. But in this first episode, really don't have much of a clue. All we know is that when they get to where the first one is, it's not there anymore. And there's just havoc everywhere. I don't know whether that was caused by the red signal or whether that was caused by something else. But so we don't really know anything about the red signals at this point. We do, however, get introduced to the lovely, charming, and ever so friendly House of Sarek.
Such a warm guy.
Which just gets creepier and creepier every iteration of Star Trek. And now it's this giant palace with these winding staircases. Spock has a room the size of Toledo. And he's not interested in speaking with Burnham when she arrives.
Slams the door in her face.
Yeah. Shoots a hologram serpent after her and then shuts the door right in her face.
Yeah.
We also find out that Stamets is leaving the ship, that he's signed on to become an instructor at the Vulcan Science Academy.
Hey, by the way, you missed a bullet point there.
Well, we will get to that one as well.
Okay. Excuse me. I'm reading the cue cards off again.
Okay. All right. So let me double back right now. One of the things that is right in your face, of course, is the fact that now we have another captain in command of Discovery, and we as the audience and the bridge crew go, well, not so much us because we know about Pike, but the bridge crew is going, okay, we got really, really burned by the last captain. you know, how's this going to work out for us?
Mm-hmm.
And he has to do some, you know, big reassuring that he is not Lorca. And it's taking time for them to really warm up to him, I think. And I think, you know, realistically so. You just don't come right and go, sure, come on in.
Well, Pike comes with some baggage, too, because he said the 5-year mission they were on and they stayed out of the war. He was a bit stressed and he starts snapping on the bridge. And then, you know, Michael Burnham has to calm him down and say, I was getting to the solution you were looking for. If you just shut up and let me go. And then says, you know, nobody on this bridge is going to leave another Starfleet officer behind. So he eventually goes, yeah, right there with you.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, I think that, you know, that explanation of where the Enterprise was during the war, you know, you have to explain it. And I'm not quite sure I buy it, but you have to explain it. In a sense of that they're saying that the Enterprise was so far away on its 5-year mission that by the time they got back, it was going to be pointless. And I think then, you know, Pike is saying, well, what good is it, you know, staying away if you come back and there's nothing there? So he does have problems with what he was told to do.
Almost in the same sentence, Michael says, you know, the Enterprise was an instrument of last resort. And I'm like, well, what does that mean? And if it was, is it so powerful that they didn't want to unleash it on anybody? If it was, why didn't they enter it into the war?
Does it have a Death Blossom that we didn't know about? Hey, last Starfighter reference.
I do have a question though. All right. So one thing that I was trying to wrestle with in my mind was that, mm-hmm. you know, if you look at, and I know that we're talking Kelvin timeline, but you know, you see that Pike was doing this thing. He actually was a companion of the Enterprise. And then it was a little while later, even after Kirk had the Enterprise, that they were considering sending him out on a 5-year mission. So then I started thinking, okay, well, about the prime timeline, was Pike already on that 5-year mission, or was that something that came after?
Well, it would be a different mission, right? Because Kirk had a 5-year mission. Well, I'm assuming that
the same one or two different missions.
Right. So I guess that's a good point that if it's a 5-year mission and there just happens to be a change of command, does the 5-year mission continue along that? Or is it now, okay, we have a new crew. We're now setting out on another.
That's a good point, because originally when I heard him say the 5-year mission, I was thinking he had his 5 years and Kirk had his 5 years, but that's not the, if you think about the opening line of the show, it's the story of the USS Enterprise. It's 5-year mission. The ship has a 5-year mission. So I think you're right. Mm-hmm. The command changed.
Right.
Maybe. Yeah.
So we can investigate that further to see if there's any thing in canon that kind of, you know, I mean, I'm sure there's stuff in other literature, but, you know, just trusting the stuff we've actually seen, does it give any kind of clue about that type of thing?
Memory Alpha, clear it up.
Absolutely.
Now, Clinton,
absolutely.
You had a Vulcan eyebrow about Jet Reno, the engineer that was abandoned on the Hiawatha, or that was saving everybody on the Hiawatha.
Yeah, I just feel like, and I wrote this in the article, which you can find over at thetopicistrek.com. I did a review of Brother, and I've also done one of New Eden, which is up as well.
Oh, yes, wait, maybe I should read our own website.
What leads you to this suspicion?
Well, what I said in the article is that you have all this stuff happening that they have to get all the medical people off of the asteroid before, you know, it's pulled into the pulsar. Mm-hmm. Things are going crazy. They're having to prop up the door to the transporter room. The transporter is kind of shaky, you know, everything's going on. And Pike makes a point at that point to go, by the way, the red burst, do you know anything about those red bursts? And, you know, Reno says, Nope.
Never heard of them.
Don't know anything about them. Don't know what you're talking about. I'm going, now keep in mind that when they went to New Eden, which we didn't know this until this week, but Jacob says that he saw the red light in the sky.
Yeah.
So you would think Reno would have seen that.
She's on a crashed ship, barely holding together.
But she's very much on the lookout for anything that would be coming at her.
Or she probably, the opportunity probably for her to see it would have been before they crashed.
Well, they were there for 10 months.
Right. So I think they were there. I think they were already crashed when the red signal appeared there.
Well, I have a theory too, and I'm curious if it's similar to yours.
Okay, go ahead.
So I think the red angel or the red signals is a thread to bring, change to these different areas. Obviously, we saw the new the church and everything, and there's a people there. There's a reason why they were, brought there from Earth. And then there's a reason why they were brought to this crash site. I think it's leading everybody on this trail. And I don't know if it's necessarily, we obviously don't know the rest of the situations with the other signals, but I just have a feeling like it's nothing more than somebody, an alien species or a divine intervention pulling that thread and causing the discovery to follow along and fix these wrongs or change these things, or for some reason they're making changes to all these different spots.
We're hopping ahead here a bit, but I did say in my review I'm saying that I did say in my review for New Eden that the audience starts to feel like, is this some kind of quantum leap type of thing happening here where they have to right wrongs? Oh, look, here's a place where
that's what I was have. Yes.
But I guess.
Then they should have brought back Scott Bakula.
Yes. Well, but he's the wrong timeline. How old would Archer be by that point? It makes no sense.
612.
I'm willing to look past Jet Reno, and to make a bad pun here, I think she's a red herring.
We'll see, because I think she comes back. I try not to look too far ahead, but I know that in an interview, she was talking about a scene that Tilly's in, which I have seen in some of the trailers that they ran for this season. That hasn't happened yet. There's no reason for her to be hanging around the set watching this thing happen unless her character is there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my guess, is that we haven't seen the last of her for some reason.
I'd like to be proven wrong.
And maybe she'll see like on the view screen, an image of the red angel. She goes, oh, is that what you were asking about?
Yeah. Oh, I thought, I'm colorblind and I really couldn't tell.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
what that was all about.
That's my friend.
I call him Tim.
Speaking of Easter eggs, or more appropriately, fortune cookies, what did you all think of the fortune cookie that Pike had that said, not every cage is a prison and not every loss eternal?
Right. He picks this up off the floor in Lorca's ready room. When I saw it, I felt like it was too on the nose to be what it means, because we find out in the episode, The Cage, that cage is not a prison.
Right.
And now we make also have reference that, Stamets is talking about the fact that he has visions of Culber.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And so, is this literally, are we to be taking this as, no, this is the direction we're going? Or is it more cryptic than that? I'm not sure. And I'm also not sure. I mean, I know something about an alien race that shows up apparently sometime this season, which could make the first part make sense. And I think you can guess which alien species that is. But I wasn't sure if it just seemed, that's way too obvious.
Well, I think the not every loss eternal is probably the key there, because like you said, you got Stamets, and then we're going to talk about something else that happens in New Eden. And of course, I just think that that's going to play a role in the Culber thing. Cause they mentioned it several times, loss. I was watching it, rewatching the other day, and I remember saying, oh, that's another place where they mentioned loss, or, you know, loss isn't over, or I forget the wording, but, they mentioned it several times. So I don't know about you'd say on the nose, but they sure are hinting at it pretty heavily.
Right.
At a minimum, it was a nice tip of the hat.
Yeah.
Indeed. And also it's like, you know, really nobody was really cleaning up in Lorca's ready room. It's like this, where are those people from the lower decks? They should be up here, you know, using the vacuum cleaner or something.
The Roomba didn't pick that up.
That's right.
I did like the fact when they launched those pods towards the Hiawatha and Saru's ganglia comes out and he says, really? Are you surprised?
Yeah.
I think the writers are having a lot more fun with the characters. You know, Mary Wiseman doing Tilly was over the top with the extra verbiage, yeah, and Stamets says, she was Tilly times fewer things. Yeah. And you know, I think, plus we got to know the actual names of the bridge crew now.
I know.
Although I question how fast Pike picked up all the names.
You know, he's just that good. Or he knew them ahead of time.
He studied them ahead of time
and felt good, you know, to have everybody.
Part of the Starfleet themselves. Academy training. Pick up names.
it's not part of the Orville training, that's for sure.
I did like how he said, all right, name, like roll call.
Yeah.
That's it.
I was like, okay, that is pretty cool.
And somebody else had Cambot.
Cambot.
Tom Servo.
Yeah, Tom Servo.
And this episode, interestingly enough, broke another thing with Discovery. This was an hour-long episode. It literally was 1 hour and 1 minute, whereas most episodes, including the second one going to be talking about, are run around 40 to 45 minutes tops. And this episode, in my mind, flew by. It was nonstop things going on. The effects were over the top. It's just like everything was... It came in on the season opener, bringing its A game with it.
Mm-hmm. You know, I do have one complaint, and that's the pods we were just talking about.
Yes.
All right. So
be too much.
Yeah, it was too much. One, the whole floor goes down so you can get to these pods. That's kind of weird. Two, that they spin and all this other stuff. Every shuttlecraft or anything you've seen, I guess, except for
Spock's ship.
Maybe the spot. Well, that was super fast, wasn't it? His little ship that you're talking about, the one from the motion picture,
the red squid, matter one.
Yeah.
The obelisk, you know, anyway, it's all spins and everything. I'm like, why did you think they would come up with something that was a little more self-contained, so it had a smaller footprint, so it'd be easier to navigate through?
I didn't have so much a problem with that. The problem that I had, and I think this does get to the issue about how much do you update, how much do you pitch toward an audience for today rather than an audience who's looking for straight canon, was the idea, and this also happened in the Kelvin timeline movies, of the disappearing and reappearing things, like in this case, the EV suit and the helmet just kind of
coming
out of nowhere and assembling themselves on your body.
Yeah. Like Iron Man.
To me, that was more jarring. And I felt like, all right, I know why you did it. That's kind of the bar in some series now, what one does. But I think you could have even had more drama if you had the physical helmet and he was struggling to get that faceplate down.
Yeah.
You know, rather than just kind of it's stuck, because he can't pull at it because it's not really there.
But when they're on the ship, the wreckage, if he had to carry a helmet and run it would be a little cumbersome. That's why it's easier to make that thing go away rather than having them carrying it around.
Yeah, and then you have problems with the thing like banging around and making noise that they've got to loop out of there. All right, well, let's, in combination with that, let's move on also to our second story.
And by the
way,
yes. One other quick note is that, you know, I'm a fan of the old Star Trek comics, the Golden Key one, or Golden Key, Golden Key ones. And you can see, even in the Kelvin movies, and then, of course, this one, the uniforms they put on before they got on the ship, they had the skin tight thing on there, like diving suit, wetsuit looking uniform.
Yep.
Those kind of thing. Huh?
Well, they also played us on the red shirt thing as well during that whole sequence.
They played us on the
screen. they had the woman who came over from the Enterprise. Mm-hmm. And Pike walks by saying, you know, take off that red shirt and put on your EV suit.
Which turned out to be red.
And suddenly, you're right. And that's red, too. You're going, we know who's going to get it in this one.
And they fooled us.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say they're taking some visual cues, I think, from even some of the comic books. And stuff as well.
Didn't the wetsuit that was in what was that? Was that in Into Darkness at the beginning? Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that kind of had that same look too. Yeah.
Yeah. When I first saw it, I went, "Whoa!" I'm having flashbacks to the comics because there's a couple of times they had those tight suits on. They're right on the cover, you know. And I thought that when I saw the movie, and of course I thought the same thing when I saw Discovery the other day.
All right, well, let's merge this in with our discussion about New Eden. This one, the story was written by Akiva Goldsman and Sean Cochran, and the teleplay was by Vaughn Wilmot and Sean Cochran, and directed by Jonathan Frakes.
That's a newcomer. He's a newcomer.
Rookie. The quick synopsis of this one is, a new signal brings the Discovery to a distant planet, Terralysium, that is inhabited by the descendants of human survivors of World War III, which was fought on Earth 200 years earlier. And of course, this is the puzzle because, well, Earth didn't have warp drive or any type of thing. And even if they did, how long would it take them to get there? Because Discovery used a spore drive to get that far out into the Beta Quadrant. And we get sort of an answer about what happened. It appears as if they were spirited away. They were in the white church and the red angel came in to the church while the church was about to be bombarded with the entire city was going to be bombarded with nuclear weapons. And they were suddenly taken to Terralysium. And have been there for 200 years, cobbling together their own religion, which is a combination of religions.
It looked like a ransom note Bible.
It did. It did, because it's all cut and paste of, literally cut and paste of pieces into this book. So this story, as Jonathan Frakes mentioned in the article we were reading earlier, really is a discussion about science versus faith. And a lot of that burden falls to Pike and Burnham to have that conversation back and forth two or three times during the episode, mm-hmm. where she's constantly saying, well, there's no evidence for such and such. And he's saying, well, you know, it
maybe
seems to be.
It.
Yeah. That this type of, you know, when she says she sees the red angel and he says that, that certainly means something. Well, I wouldn't subscribe, anything supernatural about it. He says, well, the people on New Eden would.
What was the
conversation.
Purpose of the need to have the lights on in the church?
I think that in the end, that was supposed to symbolize that the beacon mm-hmm. was lit again, that
the beacon for your community, and as well as, you know, and maybe a little on the divine side for everybody that's there.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's why the, like, you know, the light inside that place is, you could get a tan inside that church. I don't know how much light they had going on in there, but
reignite their faith. Hey, the lights are back on. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It's burning down the church. Turn them off. Turn them off.
It's because
pour water on it.
Pike gave them the power supply that runs at 200 watts instead of 100 watts.
Oh, we should have thought about that.
Hey, by the way, I have an idea. Something just occurred to me. You know, I know you see that they're talking about science and faith. Well, look at the first episode. You had, what's her name? I can't remember her character's name. Jet was using science to keep those people alive. And then you got this one where we're talking about a church.
Yeah.
It's okay, that's my point.
Yeah. Nope.
I just thought of it. I was like, okay, well, there is a theme going there. Right. Sure.
Well, you know, keep in mind that this is, you know, like the Picard show, this is one long story told over many, many episodes, and where, you know, they're somewhat self-contained, but somewhat not, unless you view the thing as a whole. We have Pike saying that they could not interfere with this society because of General Order One.
Yeah, they're pre-warp.
Right. Now, did you feel like that was the appropriate way to go with a culture that really wasn't native to where they were, apparently had just been kind of ripped from Earth and dropped here? Do you feel like that was the way to go in that situation?
I don't have a reaction one way or the other whether it was the right way to go, but I do like the fact that the writers engaged that. They said, look, these are people from Earth. They were taken pre-warp. Now what do you do? And I like the fact that they made us think about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. We also got to see two of the bridge crew doing things.
Doing
things.
You know, well, they didn't do the same thing. They were doing different things. We had Owoshikun, who was down on the planet, and a problem solver. Clearly a problem solver. Oh, we're locked in the basement. Well, if it's just using a latch, I'll get a magnet.
And, yeah. Magnet and a coat hanger. We're good.
Yeah. We're out of that. Hey, take that, MacGyver.
Good thing they make bolt locks the same way they do on Earth today.
Well, remember, that's the basement, and I believe, if I'm interpreting the episode correctly, that is that church. That's not a recreation of that church. That's church. And then we get to see Detmer doing a donut with a starship.
Sure, why not?
I question the donut part, but yes.
It could be done.
It was nice to see more interaction with the rest of the bridge crew, and hopefully that will continue. Now, one thing that I did not know, I don't remember which article I was reading this in, and I'm not sure if it got past any of you, but Lieutenant Commander Arium,
the robot lady,
not the same actress as it was last year.
I did not realize that. No, but what I did notice is every time the camera's on, she only makes noise when the camera's on her, and it's always like, sorry, Taco Bell.
Well, there's so much plastic on her head, it could be anybody. It's Marina Sirtis.
I didn't have any follow-up on why the actress changed. I just know that it is a different actress now playing that part.
Good for you.
Speaking about actresses, we were talking earlier about the not every loss is eternal. Tilly encounters somebody.
This I thought that was an interesting twist at the end of the show when Tilly's friend is like, first of all, she comes up and starts talking to her like, Tilly, why aren't you doing, like, well, who the heck are you? I mean, obviously they kind of know each other from the way they're interacting, but then when she goes to look her up at the end, where is it?
Spoiler alert.
By now, really? I don't know. Yeah.
Really? Hey, it's only been a week. Some people may be listening later.
No, maybe they're finding the show. It's kind of.
So, I thought that was very. You know, that's going to play into the storyline. The question is, how are they doing? What are they? What ride are they taking us on now?
Right. And in the article that I wrote for the topic is Trek.com about this episode, I said that it's not surprising to me. I mean, we have Stamets, who has seen Culber in the mycelium network. Well, clearly, Tilly is not in the mycelium network.
That you know.
But if you will recall, in the very last episode of last season, a unique piece of spore lands on her shoulder.
That was just Tinkerbell. Come on.
And so I'm wondering if she's somehow connected to the mycelium network, which is why
infected by the mycelial network.
Well, that could be as well. Might not necessarily be a good thing. I mean, when this character May Ahern first showed up in sickbay, though, my first thought was, where did she come from?
Yeah,
we don't know her. Yeah. And as soon as other people came into the room, she kind of slid off to the side and out of there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I thought, there's something really not right about this.
I still say Tinkerbell because Kirk says second star to the right and straight until morning.
Well, well you might.
My son Harrison, he goes, he immediately went, hey, they're not interacting with her. I was like, oh wow, you caught that pretty quick.
She's been dead all along.
I see dead people.
What was that? She was talking about something, or they were talking. She was talking in the sick bay after the first sighting. But you know, she, her and Tilly were having a little conversation.
Yeah.
Or Tilly was bouncing ideas off of her, more or less. Yeah, Harrison picked it out. I went, wow. Oh yeah, maybe he is. Yeah, I think you're right. And
but also yeah. She was only serving as a sounding board, and then she did this kind of, I think you know the answer, you know, think a little bit harder. Isn't there something you have?
Kind of like playing conscience or something.
I think the Red Angel has something to do with this too. I'm telling you, it's that thread.
Right, because I'm thinking, you know, is it a coincidence that Discovery just happens to have the right asteroid that can be used to draw the radioactive debris away from Terra Elysium?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like all these moving parts kind of fitting together, and I don't know. It's almost like a quest. Okay, you dropped this and picked up this. You know, what did they pick up this time that they're going to bring to the next place?
Hey, did they recover?
Your bag of holding is full, sir. I say it's full.
You must pick up a dragon's tooth, blah, 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 gold key, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, pick up the worn lantern in the corner of the room.
That's right. That's right.
You must get a camera.
I gave it to Jacob. It's gone now.
Get a broken camera from a... where are we supposed to get a broken camera from the 21st century?
My mind went to Infocom. I was thinking.
Well, any final thoughts on these two episodes before we come back from our main mission?
I very much liked them. I want to see where they go.
I thought New Eden was definitely more Star Trek than anything I've seen in Discovery.
It did have that classic TOS vibe in the storyline.
Especially right, and what tied it together was when Pike decided to let that guy know. You know, it's very Star Trek. He goes, okay, I'm going to break the rule here and let that guy in on a secret. And, you know, went and told him stuff. And I'm like, that is so Star Trek-y that they would tie it in like that. And he did what he thought was right.
It's more of a Kirk maneuver, though. Kirk is known for breaking the rules.
Well, I mean, Star Trek.
Yeah, but Jacob would be a woman and there'd be a whole other thing going on
green.
There. So,
green.
Barely dressed.
But you know what I'm saying? But it had that feeling like it was, even though it's part of an overarching story, it was a very individual story to a point.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. All right. On that note, we're coming back from our main mission. Main mission. Stepping on a treble. Must be from that exhibit. No, you got to go. You got to go. You got to go to the in Indianapolis or Indiana. Someplace.
Let's just beam out of here. Deal with it. There. Good.
Over to the Klingon ship, right? Good job. All right. And now it's time for our warp speed roundtable. And this time around, it's going to be decision time between all of us. I'm going to ask each of you which of the four Star Trek Short Treks episodes was your favorite. I will start with Craig.
Clinton. No, you go first, Clinton.
All right. I'll go first because fine. To me, it came down to two episodes, Calypso and The Escape Artist. Mm-hmm. And I just felt like I was very intrigued by Calypso, I just felt like The Escape Artist was just good fun. And so I would say of the four of them, edging out slightly, Calypso is The Escape Artist. All right. Now, Craig, you're up.
I think I'm in the same boat with you. I enjoyed Runaway, seeing Tilly doing, you know, Tilly stuff on the ship. And Brightest Star I thought was good because we saw a little insight on Saru's background, which was referenced in the episodes, in the Prime episode or whatever you want to call them, the regular episodes. But I enjoyed Calypso because I was intrigued, like you said. He was actually interacting with the ship computer. It was in the, you know, thousand years in the future, and there's a lot of unknowns, so it kind of framed things a little differently. I enjoyed that, but on the whole, I think Escape Artist was where they really nailed it, because it was fun in the Star Trek universe, and it, you know, I thought Rainn Wilson kind of nails the mud, a different style of mud a little bit.
Absolutely. All right. And how about you, sir?
All good things.
No. Wait, the other article. You clicked through to one of those other articles.
I got news for you.
Reading other things.
I got news for you. All good things is not short.
But the ending, man, the ending. I'm going to take a little different direction. I thought that Brightest Star had a few too many loose ends that we tore apart in our discussion about that. The Escape Artist was fun, but I'm going with Calypso. Okay. I like where it took us, and when you first, I love shows when you first get into them, and you're like, where are we and what happened? Because clearly we're not in the same time space continuum. Like what alternate reality or future or past did they send us to write this story? And I thought it was very creatively written. I like the actors. They did a great job. I the whole thing about how Alexa could morph on the ship and
Alexa. Hey Alexa, where's my Prime order?
Right.
800 years ago.
I've been told to wait here till the crew returns. Oh, I'm going to wait here till the crew returns. I think that one edges out The Escape Artist just a little bit in my book.
Okay. I can live with either of those ones, really. I think that, like I said, I think for me, the scale was tipped just ever so slightly between those two.
Yeah, it was tight for me as well. I really enjoyed both those. I liked even the dancing scene on Calypso. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah.
All right, we'll pose the question to you, the listener, as well. If you have some thoughts about which of the four short treks you liked best, you can tweet us at The Topic is Trek or leave a note over on our Facebook page. Obviously, that's facebook.com/TheTopicIsTrek. All right, gentlemen, it's time to refill the dilithium chamber and the spore drive just to be on the safe side. And get on out of here. Oh, my goodness. I don't know what's... We're back in sick bay or something. I don't...
No, I'm looking in Spock's viewer. Oh. There are no dilithium crystals left on Amazon.
Oh, well...
on Amazon.
check over at Best Buy. If you can't find it there, go over there. You can find me, Clinton, at Comedy Forecast, all one word with the number 4.com. On Twitter at Comedy Forecast, Facebook Comedy Forecast. On I have a page over on MeWe if you're using that site. And how about you guys?
We closed up shop and went home.
Oh, that's fine.
That was no one was listening anyway.
Yeah,
but we'll keep podcasting even if there is no one listening. You can find us at chuckchat.com. The one we've been doing the longest is Technorama at chuckchat.com/Technorama.
Yeah, we also do a podcast called The Topic is Trek. But wait a minute, that's this one.
Nobody's listening to that either.
Show prep is everything.
This is like zero listeners pointing to zero listeners. This, how is it? What good is promoting our other podcast if no one's listening?
Zero divided by zero.
Dear listener, I apologize for the lack of faith in you. I believe in you.
Yeah.
All right.
I believe you. You're like the Red Angel. I believe you exist.
That's right. We're back to Tinkerbell. Tinkerbell.
Now hit the theme, boys.
Everybody clap if you believe in fairies.
If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic Is Trek, visit our Facebook page, or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic Is Trek, don't put on the red TV suit. Well, that, I think the blue one is the problem, really. You can put on the red EV suit.
The Blue Angels, that's the air show thing.
You've been clicking through those articles again, haven't you?